time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for joining us this weekend. We're going to talk a little bit about money.
That's right.
And you and your relationship with money.
Both myself and my co-host, we are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays with people like yourself, come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And so whether you have advisors you work with now or do things on your own, whether you're highly sophisticated or you're just getting started, whatever the case, we appreciate the fact you're tuning in. And we are here to help you make better choices with your finances. And if you'd like to join us, have your own question you'd like to bring to us, our contact number here at the studio is 921-1530. That's in the 916 area code. Anything that has to do with financial issues, not just necessarily an account, but how things are structured or estate planning or how do you take care of your...
Or mortgages or reverse mortgages. Or,
money can get really complicated.
It's not life insurance. Or
oftentimes people focus on just the investment and they focus on the investments without looking at the rest of their planning issues. And what we found is sometimes those other issues are actually more important than just the investment.
Yes. Often. Oftentimes on the phone call, people call in. If one of the questions, it elicits questions from us.
Yeah, so whether it's retirement, kids' savings, whatever, 916-921-1530. Again, 916-921-1530. You can also email us a question at questions@moneymatters.com. And this, I'll just remind it, I've got... I know this financial advisor, you know, they go to these conferences and stuff. He specializes in ultra wealthy people. So people with tens or hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars. That's the niche.
Ultra wealthy.
Ultra wealthy. What did I say? High net worth?
No,
I guess it's all relative.
Ultra wealthy.
Yeah. Whatever that really means, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you earn $30,000 a year and your friend earns $200,000, they're ultra wealthy. But
yeah, everything's relative.
Clearly, if you have $1 billion, I think everyone would agree that's pretty dang wealthy. Anyway, it was interesting to have a conversation because he says a lot of these people, they're still focusing on return. And he has them step back and said, let's look at the big picture. First of all, you can't take any of this with you, right? You might be able to amass some more while you're living, but let's focus on really what are all these assets supposed to be doing for your family and those other things you care about. And much more value is added in the estate planning.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Then in just, can we get another point or two?
Yeah, for that wealth, the estate planning is actually
everything.
Oftentimes is more important than
everything.
And it's hard to plan an estate because the rules change constantly.
And it used to be pretty important for a lot of folks, everyday folks. It still is, but I mean,
when we did this, when I started in the business 25 years ago, you could pass on
$600,000. If you had more than $600,000, you had estate tax.
And now if it's a married couple and you do it correctly, it's $10
million. 10.6 or something like that, $5.3 million each.
A lot of money.
Yeah, so the average family doesn't
have
$10 million.
$10 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, it was a lot of money in Torrance where I grew up too.
Yeah.
South Torrance High School.
Oh, Carmichael, California, $10 million is... Everyone had $10 million in Carmichael.
He was just dripping with money.
Yeah, it was.
Anyway, this a couple interesting things, I think.
Can I talk about the Shake Shack? I'm sorry.
That's what I was leading. I was trying to do a little transition here.
Okay.
They call that transition.
Yeah, I missed that day in radio school.
You missed every day in radio school. Shake Shack.
Shake Shack.
I've never eaten at a Shake Shack.
It's primarily...
Have you eaten at a Shake Shack?
I have not. But it's primarily an East Coast restaurant chain. Hamburgers.
Fast food.
Yeah. Supposed to be higher quality.
A little nicer fast food.
They go public.
Instead of $3 for a burger, it's $6 for a burger.
Yeah.
It must be bigger, better burgers.
I don't know. I've never eaten at one, but I'm going to assume. So they go public yesterday. This restaurant chain is valued at $1.6 billion. So you'd say, what's that mean? Well, they have 63 restaurants. It means each restaurant is worth over $25 million a restaurant.
And so what is, in comparison, the average McDonald's restaurant is worth $2.5 million.
So it makes no sense to me.
They really believe that each restaurant, each fast food restaurant, can earn 10 times as much as the average McDonald's restaurant? That I'm sure is much quicker.
Yeah.
But I think the reason...
It's crazy.
Well, I think the reason we're bringing this up, it's the market, the environment we're in right now, with interest rates heading further south every day, it seems, with the global uncertainty,
with
rising dollar.
International stocks have been beat up. There's not many asset classes that have done well.
Well, and foreign stuff doesn't look good, in large part because our dollar continues to rally. So if you're dollar-based, you're thinking, man, this keeps going down. And it's causing people to chase into things they otherwise would not be involved with.
Shake Shack. I wouldn't buy Shake Shack.
I don't even think I would go in this. Actually, a milkshake sounds pretty dang good right now.
I would go into a Shake Shack.
Like a banana, chocolate banana. But chocolate chip banana.
But we saw the same
really
thing.
Good.
We saw the same thing with the Habit.
You got protein.
The Habit.
Chocolate's kind of like a vegetable. Healthy.
The Habit burger chain came out, a couple months ago, last month? And it had a similar valuation. And they had 100.
There's 100 Habits around here, right?
I've eaten at the Habit.
I think I ate that once.
I think I've developed one. A Habit.
I don't eat at the fast food. I do a good burger sometimes.
The Habit's got
Purple Place has a pretty mean burger.
The Habit has good burgers. And I like the Purple Place burgers as well. But I don't think the Purple Place is going to go public anytime soon.
I don't think they're going to have a second store anytime soon, my guess. And for those that lived in the region a long time, of course, the Purple Place.
You know what the Purple Place is.
Old biker bar. My wife, anyway, we'll stop with that.
Actually, you know, before they had the non-smoking in the state of California in restaurants, we used to go in there and I'd order, it reeked so bad of cigarette smoke. I would say to the waitress, I'll have a side of hash. No, I'll have some bacon and eggs and a side of stale smoke. It was disgusting, but it's not that way anymore. Love the Purple Place.
Now it's all have the hash browns and sausage bacon and a side of Lipitor, please.
There we go. So it is, Scott, you're right. It is people are reaching for yield or return, and it's causing people to go further out and on the risk.
Here is the reality that we all need to face this reality. Interest rates continue to get lower. The 10-year Treasury in the United States, some of these numbers are almost shocking. The 10-year Treasury in the United States, so here's what this means. For those investors that say, I don't want to take any risk, I want to loan my money to the safest bet possible. I'm willing to lock my money up for 10 years.
By loaning it to the
U.S. government.
U.S. government.
The interest rate today is less than 1.7%, 1.67, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
1.7. So you say, well, maybe I should look at some foreign countries. England, even lower. Germany is 0.3 something.
There's some countries that charge you to put money in their banks.
Charge you. And here's what's bizarre. I mean, if we look at the beginning of 2014, when the Treasury yield was 3 something, almost everyone was saying, interest rates are going to go up. For how many years we've been talking about?
Yeah, this
the
is
risk
what
of
are we,
interest
like
rates,
5 years now.
Interest rates are going to, but interest rates continue to decline further and further. And what happens when the 10-year Treasury goes lower? Everything else that's loan based, those interest rates decline with it. That's good if you want to refinance your mortgage, or you've got great credit and want to buy a new car, or borrow money to buy a building. Great for all those things, which is in part what the government's trying to do. The central banks are trying to spur on investment. But it is very challenging for investors, extremely challenging. And it causes people to move into things they really otherwise wouldn't be in and probably have no business being in. And unfortunately,
Timing is really, really bad.
Many investors are going to have a rude awakening when things don't go the way they're hoping. And so that is the greatest concern we have as advice. And it's not even the concern that the stock market might fall. It will fall sometime in the future. Our concern is that people are having a different view of risk. They are taking much more risk than they ever have in the past. They're taking much more risk than they ever believed. They believe they are taking, and it's not going to work out well for a lot of people. That's our great
concern.
It's
a dangerous time.
Yeah. It doesn't mean there's not opportunities out there.
There's not a lot of opportunities out there.
But it really comes down to people's expectations of future returns are going to have to be reduced, which means people are probably going to have to work longer before they retire. That's just reality. Right? You can go to some, so I heard an ad this morning on the, someone go to trading and learn how to go to a seminar and they'll teach you how to trade. You learn how to trade.
I still hear this ad. I heard one this week from, you can get 12 to 14% without, 12 to 14%. I'm thinking, what am I doing here?
Why am I working Saturday on a radio program where I can get 12 to 14% with no stock market risk?
Doggone it. Why do they give you a choice between 12 and 14? Wouldn't everyone just choose the 14? If I had a choice? But it was. They're viaticals. They're life insurance policies.
We need to take a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We'll come back. We'll take some calls. We've got a couple lines still open. If you want to join us, love to hear from you. 916-921-1530 is the number. Again, 921-1530. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
I was just sharing with Pat. I don't know.
Go ahead, share. Be the proud father. Be the proud father.
My oldest is
the opportunities.
Oh, here it comes. It's so rare.
I didn't say
when you have any pride. Most of the time, it's shame and disappointment.
That rare glimmer of proud.
And my daughter's a freshman at college down in Southern California, and I had a conference Thursday down in San Diego. I flew down to San Diego Thursday morning, and I told my daughter that I was going to be down there. She said, hey, would you want me to come down and visit? So, but awesome. So she arrived like 10:30 she's a college student, so I had to drink some coffee at night. She like 10:30 at night. We took a nice walk.
Oh, she arrived at night?
At night. We took a walk down the waterfront, had a nice little walk together, and then I got up and had a couple meetings in the morning, and then we had a nice breakfast.
She's a college student, so she didn't get up till 10 or 11.
She's sleeping in. I'm trying to wake her up. Some things don't change fast, but anyway.
Well, that's very nice.
I don't know why I'm sharing this.
Did she drive down? Take the
She drove
train?
Down.
Very nice.
They have a train?
Yes, we have a train.
I thought it's still being built. There's
a train between L.A. and San Diego.
Have you ever taken it?
I have, actually.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it's called the Surfliner. I took it. I was down...
For what? What are you talking about?
I was at Disneyland with my family and...
You're trying to escape.
And I had
all of a sudden, Pat's gone. Where's Dad? He couldn't take it anymore.
And then I had a...
Took off on the train.
I had a meeting in San Diego, so I took the train down. Actually, and the last time my family went to Disneyland, I was able to avoid that.
They must have a lot of security at Disneyland because you would think a lot of fathers would snap. Just lose it.
They snap.
You're just gone.
So that was a very nice story, Scott.
921-1530 to join us. Let's talk to Mary. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for joining us, Mary.
Everybody's making all this money in these domestic large cap funds.
Mm-hmm.
And I made some money there, but I'm wondering if I should change my portfolio around. I have about $200,000. I'm B69 in this year, and I have my money in out of the $200,000, $81,000 in large cap, $42,000 in short term investments, $28,000 in international funds, which I think I probably should get out of. And $23,000 in mid cap and $17,000 in small cap. So,
what do you think you should do?
Well, I think I should get out of international and put it in large cap. And at least do that, I think.
So here's, it's funny because I almost look at doing the other thing.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. See, this is what's hard.
This is really
difficult right now. You have a well-diversified portfolio.
Yeah.
You are 75% It looks like 75% equities, both pretty, international.
Pretty aggressive, and, but otherwise well diversified.
Yeah, yeah. You're 69, maybe a little bit aggressive, but yeah, if you're comfortable with it, aggressive. How long have you owned this a portfolio that you've managed yourself like this?
Well, it's in PERS, and so I just adjust it.
Okay.
You know, every year, and.
But you seem to know what's going on. You know, I'd be inclined not to mess with it. I certainly wouldn't sell international to buy into long term.
Here's why international, you can make a strong case why that is a much better place to be putting your money today. Valuations
are money on it this last.
That's
quarter.
Correct. That's correct.
So what you want to do is buy low and sell high.
That's what very hard to do.
What it you're is talking hard to about, do.
I know, of course it is. What you want to do right now is sell low and buy high. That's what you're just looking at doing right now. I'm going to sell my international because it lost money right now.
Yeah,
and
I know.
Buy my large cap because they did the best last year.
Right. Everybody's making money but me.
You made money? You made money.
I did. I made a lot of money on large cap.
Hey, Mary?
Yeah.
If you want to measure yourself quarter by quarter,
or year by year against
year
one index,
it's not appropriate. What you want to do is measure the lifetime of the investment
and what it's trying to do for you.
Yeah, because the problem is people actually focus on returns on a quarterly basis, and they have a tendency to chase things like this.
Yeah. Well, I do it about once a year.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Let me ask this. How did you react in 08, 09 during the crisis?
Well, I panicked, and I took a lot of money out and put it in, I don't know, bonds, I guess.
And when you say a lot, what percentage of your portfolio did you move out of equities and into bonds?
Oh, I can't remember.
Half?
I think at least half, yeah.
Okay. So now let's look back in hindsight over at that.
This is the hardest thing as an investor, Mary, and you've obviously been a wise investor. The hardest thing is getting our emotions out of it, cuz you're upset right now, cuz you could have made a lot more had you had gotten out of the international and the small and the mid and the short term, had that in large cap, you would have made a lot more money. And so you're a little frustrated with yourself.
Yeah.
Like, right? That's how you're feeling.
Well, because I knew people have been saying this for the last year, and I didn't do anything.
You think people have been saying it because...
They've also been saying the stock market's going to crash, the sky's falling. You hear everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. If you think back about how you reacted in the Great Recession and the market falling off, you actually sold low...
Yeah.
And at some point in time, came back and bought at a higher number.
Right.
And it should have been exactly the opposite, or you should have just held your ground.
Well, that would have been very difficult to do.
Okay, it's going to be very difficult this time, too, because it's going to happen again.
You know, I'm glad you chuckled. You know, here's the reality. Good investors take an honest inventory of how they react, right?
Yeah.
Just like every other area of your life, right? There's some areas in my life I'm pretty good at. Other areas, it's like, I really don't like that part about me. I've tried to work on it. Not much really changes. That's just how I am. And I have to set up some boundaries in my life to make sure that I live within this sort of structure. I really think it's the same thing from an investment standpoint. You are obviously a bright woman, right? So, you are. So, You think, boy, I'd certainly like to be able to make these decisions. But if you look from reality, how you've reacted in the past, odds are you're going to react similarly in the future.
So if I were to do anything to this portfolio, I would actually move out a little bit of the large, mid, and small, and more into bond.
You're not a little, Pat.
Really?
If this was your sister, if Mary was your sister, and you were having dinner right now with your sister... You'd say, sister, are you crazy? Don't have any more than half your money in stocks right now.
Yeah, that's what I'd say.
At 69 years old.
That's what I would say.
Yeah, but actually, this money is not for me. This is for my kids. And
well, then,
so I have no, I'm not taking, I'm trying to grow it for
Mary,
my kids.
Mary?
Yeah.
Then
You didn't act that
you
way.
You didn't act that way in 08 and 09 and 10.
Well, actually, I did because I didn't. I wanted this money for them. I didn't want to lose it all.
Yeah. So, but you need to lower the equity exposure in this portfolio.
You're going to do it again. You'll act the same way again.
You will. And the market is going to fall again bad. We don't know when. Yeah, of course it's going to.
Well, not this year.
Oh, what? How do you know that?
Because the United States is wonderful.
No, listen, I would actually give it greater probability to go down than to go up.
I would too.
Well, it might be a little over. Yeah.
Well, if you look at the price to earnings ratios on the market, and every time it's done this historically,
nobody knows.
But the question is,
nobody knows when it's going to fall.
It's not if, it's when.
Nobody knows.
But it's been a long time since we've seen a 10 or 20% decline in this marketplace.
The longer it goes, the statistical probability of a fall become greater.
And the higher the price to earnings ratio.
And other things, yes.
Yeah, a number of things. So I would lower the equity exposure in the portfolio.
I would too. So I would do the opposite of what you called this about. I would reduce some of your large cap and put it in short term.
I agree.
I wouldn't touch the international. I would reduce some of your large cap.
And it's hard to do because you're looking at it saying, well, they just
that
told
would
me
be
to move.
Selling high, buying low.
And you're looking at it and saying, well, those didn't do well. Remember, your portfolio is not doing anything. It did.
Yeah.
Everything is measured in the past.
Buy low,
sell high.
Yeah.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Good luck, Mary. Right. I know it's not always easy. Yeah. It's
we made her day. She's like, I'm never calling that show again. The young punks.
We're not so young anymore. But.
Oh, I know. Well, at one point in time I was.
But I kind of went back to Pat. You were giving me this weird look when I'm talking about taking an inventory of yourself. But that's true.
Well, I was kind of curious. When do you do this? And why?
Come on, we all have
we do. You have to know how you react in certain situations. And if she reacted negatively in that marketplace before,
she will again.
She will again.
What happens? We as humans, we have a tendency to believe the current environment will continue on. Whatever's happening, we believe is going to continue. When things are going well, we extrapolate and believe that things are going to continue to go well. And when things are going poorly, we extrapolate and believe they're going to continue to go poorly. You could just look back at history and look at periods of times and consumer sentiment during those times, and it'll back up exactly what we're stating here. So the challenge is when things continue to, for example, when the stock market continues to fall and fall and fall, those are great buying opportunities, not selling opportunities. But what happens for many emotionally is when things go down, it's, oh my gosh, it's going to continue to decline. Things are going to go down and down and down. And so people say, I better be wise. I better make the prudent thing here and get out before things go lower. That's what it.
Or at least pull back. You don't have to get out. At least you recognize that riskier territory.
But the point is, it's important to look at how we've reacted at other periods of time. And I mean, I think for some benefit, if we want to look for a silver lining, the last couple downturns is certainly a great test for us all to see how we reacted. And we could either say, oh, I'm smarter than that. I've learned from that. Maybe. Or you can say, this is how I felt during that time. And these are the things I did to protect myself from those negative feelings. And I'm probably going to do something similar again next time around. I mean, this is serious stuff because, I mean, part of the value I think advisors add is during times like this, keeping people in the proper allocations, not getting too piggish, should we say, and when things are going south, keeping them in the right allocations and not selling out. So, and the longer this stock market continues to run,
the harder it will be to do.
The more people are going to be selling low and buying high. So we're taking a quick break. 921-1530. Would love to take your calls either on the markets like question like allocation or something to do with your retirement or college savings plans, whatever. 916-921-1530 or send us an email, questions@moneymatters.com. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today. Fourth quarter earnings came in
mm-hmm.
Friday. The growth was revised under 3%, 2.6%. And some of the government officials almost like cheering that's a good thing.
Well, they weren't earnings.
I mean, GDP.
Yeah, because the government
doesn't... We'll talk about earnings another time.
Doesn't earn. They take.
You would think they do. The government spends on this. We're going to give this away.
There are a lot of... is that just me being cynical as I grow older?
Probably. There's that, too.
Yeah, there's both things. It's a perfect storm. It's the cynicism.
Perfect storm. At the time, we're becoming more socialistic, you're becoming more cynical.
I know.
It's a double whammy.
It's the perfect storm
for Pat's personal life. So, we've had 9 years in a row with our GDP growing under 3%. We have not had another time in recorded U.S. history where we've had 9 consecutive years of growth so low.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
they did research back to 1930. We've had not, since 1930, we have not had 9 years of consecutive growth under 3%. We've not had one outlier year.
That's pretty amazing.
That is why the economy is tough for many.
That is, absolutely. And there's no,
we're just not,
there's not
growing
wage growth.
Fast enough.
There's no wage growth.
It's amazing. Slow growth. These policies and the central banks, all they keep doing,
lower
let's figure out how to get interest rates even lower. We'll buy more bonds.
Yeah.
We'll push the rates down further and further. That
and it's, and it's happening all everywhere. It's happening in China, one of the highest fastest growing economies in the world, which is...
Their growth's under 8% now in their world.
Yeah, well, it's not even at 8.
You mean if...
Huh? Yeah.
You don't exactly believe all the numbers that are coming out?
I don't believe most of the numbers that are coming out of China.
It's interesting how so much of the economy, so much of China's growth feels like Japan's growth in the 80s.
It's eerie.
It's this kind of incestuous relationship between
real estate and equities.
I was going to say between the government regulated banks and the enterprise. It's too cozy of a relationship.
Yeah, but there's a huge shadow banking, although there's a large shadow banking industry in the United States as well. It's just more highly regulated.
Well, it's not quite so much shadow then, is it?
Thank you. Yeah, no, but it evolves
shadow,
every day.
Shadow, the black market, highly regulated black market.
What they're bringing, used car financing is a big... I never knew. I read a couple articles about it in the last month about used car financing, very low income car financing, how it's being collateralized and sold in the secondary
super
market.
Super high rates.
Oh, incredible. Anyway.
916-921-1530 to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Or questions at moneymatters.com.
Yes. Let's talk with Joanne. Joanne, welcome to Hanson McLean.
Hi. My question has to do with if one bank offers an interest rate of over 1% and others offer 0.3 or less, should I be worried about the bank stability like junk bonds?
You know,
that's a good question.
That is. So, Joanne,
how old are you, Joanne?
80.
So you've been around long enough to remember Charles Keating and Lincoln Savings and Loan and all that stuff when the savings and loan crisis took place, right?
Right.
Where people went to the bank, they said, some of these banks said, oh, we can give you a much higher rate. Oh, okay, and that sounds good to me. And what ends up happening during that time, and here's why you're concerned, and it's being prudent here. What happened during that time is the banks, they weren't taking people's money and put them on deposit. They took their money and sold them. Essentially, they loaned the money directly to the bank corporation.
They were taking bonds in the bank. So the answer to your question is, as long as it's FDIC insured.
Or the credit union equivalent, whatever that is.
Which is...
The NCUA or something.
As long as it's FDIC insured, you're fine. But it pays to shop those rates.
And make sure it's U.S. domiciled here in the United States.
Okay.
But what you're seeing is that the ones that pay the higher interest rates are typically not your conventional bank branches. And the reason they actually can pay that higher interest rate is because they don't have the normal bank structure that what your retail bank does. So in Sacramento, you're probably looking at Beal Bank. Might have been one of them. And then there's some online banking that was Ally Bank. There's a couple of them. Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. They're fine. Have you been to the Beale Bank?
No.
It's interesting because it doesn't look like a bank at all. When you go inside there, there's...
You're not a shareholder at Beale Bank, are you?
I am not.
Okay.
I'm a depositor, though.
Are you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I know Pat's not, by the way. We wouldn't have that kind of... We would never have that kind of conflict of interest.
Oh, the Beale Bank? Yeah, no. But so anyway, it's when you go in there, it doesn't look like a bank at all. There's a bunch of desks sitting around, and you can't bank there like you would a normal bank. You come in, you put your deposit in, you leave it.
Okay.
So just as long as you know that, and it works. And that's one of the reasons they can pay higher interest rates is because they don't have to take care of all those other things that you that people have come to expect from a bank.
Got it.
All right.
All right. Good luck, Joanne.
Okay, thank you.
Don't worry about the bank itself. Matter of fact, you really wouldn't even care if the bank went bust on you.
When it would slow, it would be some paperwork a little bit, kind of a hassle.
Yeah, I remember when Washington Mutual went bankrupt. We had a number of clients that had CDs with Washington Mutual because we, as an advisor, we can help in accounts. So and
they paid pretty quick,
like a couple days. There, the money's right back in the account.
Yeah. And there's, if you're looking for higher CD rates, you can actually shop your own bank. You can go to your own bank and ask for a higher rate and see what they say.
The challenge is most banks don't know what to do with all their deposits.
That's true.
I remember this last week I'm going through the mail and it's my 1099 from my own personal checking account, which I knew wouldn't be much, but it was $1.18 or so. It was so low, and I usually keep a pretty high balance relatively in my checking account, and I've got the best account I can get in all this. And it was like I couldn't even buy a cup of coffee.
With that?
Maybe Denny's coffee. How much is Denny's coffee anymore? Is it cheap?
Well,
Starbucks,
you know, Scott,
I guess, is a buck. What's Starbucks now? $1.75 or something? $2?
Frequent Denny's often.
North of that? Joey, you've seen north of that? Starbucks, a regular drip coffee is more than $1.75. I can get a nugget. Let me think about this. Nugget for under $2 for a cup of coffee.
How old are you? I feel like I'm talking to my great-grandfather. We're discussing the cost where you get the cheapest cup of coffee?
You can get it free at McDonald's, I think. That's what my mom tells me. She likes to go to McDonald's for the free coffee for seniors or something.
Oh.
Yeah, you do bring up a point.
How old are you? You drive like 7 miles out of your way to get a free cup of coffee?
Money's where you find it. This reminds me years ago, a client, very well to do, senior, and he was complaining about the cost of his haircut. He says, I remember when it used to cost 2 bits to get my haircut.
That's 50 cents for anyone under the age of.
Or is it a quarter? 2 bits is a quarter.
2 bits is a quarter for anyone under the age of 70. Okay. That's what that means.
2 bits, and then.
Look at the people in the room. These all young, newly college. They're like staring at us.
two bits. Then it was $1. He said, I used to get my hair cut every 2 weeks. Then it went to $1, and now it was every 3 weeks. And then he says, now it's $6.50. I can't get my hair cut, but every 6 weeks, he says to me.
He had money.
Tons of money.
No,
that's
kidding.
Why he had money.
Yeah,
okay,
he had money,
But
cause and effect.
It was, I tried to explain, you know, you could probably afford to get your hair cut.
Why would you mess with him? Just agree.
I think I probably did. I learned a valuable lesson years ago. I had some clients that they had lots of money. They lived on their Social Security. And when they had to take required minimum distributions in their retirement accounts, they saved it. And
lots of money.
They had lots of money. Oh, yeah, yeah. Most people would love to have their kind of wealth. Not like rich, but compared to, it's all relative what we talk about. But so I remember having this conversation, trying to encourage them. You've worked hard. You saved hard to get to this point. You're at the point. You're here now, right? And you're at this. So I was trying to encourage them to either spend some, or if there's a kid or grandkid that they could enjoy helping out, or something along those lines. And I started this conversation a couple years in a row, and they would come in for an interview. And so then one year, the gentleman comes in by himself, and I said, where's Susie, or whatever his wife's name? And he says, well, that's what I want to talk to you about. He says, well, Susie feels like every time you come in, you call her a cheapskate.
That's what she heard.
That's what she heard.
That's not what you were. That's not what you were trying to convey. That's what she heard.
That's what she heard. It was a good lesson for me.
Yeah.
As an advisor.
Does she come in now?
Yeah.
And you don't bring it up anymore.
Oh, I call it cheapskate now. You really are a cheapskate. What is wrong with you?
So she came to the office. She asked for reimbursement for gas.
I had to give her little vouchers.
No, it's true. It's true. But I have many clients, though, that are like that. And some actually, you mention it maybe twice and see how they respond. But I have one client that has...
You do as an advisor.
It's your responsibility.
Yes, is to help people make the most of the assets that they have. It really is. That is in large part what our role is. At least I believe it is part of our role.
Yeah.
Help them make the most of what they've
got. But some clients will actually take that advice and will spend a little bit more freely.
Or will give to certain things that they haven't before, or to help their grandkids now while they're still alive and can see the impact it has on their grandkids and all those sort of things. Anyway, we got to take a short break. We've got... three lines open still. We'll come back to the calls when we come back from the break, and we still have time to take your call if you want to join us. 916-921-1530. And you can also email us questions@moneymatters.com. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Nice weekend here.
Yeah.
Let's talk to 916-921-1530. Talking with Bob. Bob, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yeah, good morning. Hi, guys.
Hi, Bob.
Question about Social Security. I keep reading. I'm 89. I'll be 89 next month. My wife's 85. And I keep reading that... The spouse should be receiving, at that age, 50% of the other spouse's Social Security income. I get about, in round figures, I get about $1,800 a month, and my wife gets about $600. And the question is,
why?
Should she be getting $900 or thereabouts?
Did she apply under her own Social Security or yours?
No, she played.
And
she played on her own at age 62 because
age 62.
I'm self-employed. I have a good salary, and I went to 70 and a half before I started.
So there ends the difference. So she, at her full retirement age, would be eligible for 50% of your primary insurance amount, your benefit, at your normal retirement age. So the differential here is twofold. One, she took Social Security prior to her normal retirement age. There's a reduction. The second thing is you waited. You deferred yours, so you gave yours an increase. So you've got your increase, her deduction, reduction.
For taking it early, and that's the difference between the two.
Oh, I see.
So if she had taken it at her normal retirement age, that number, the differential would have been much smaller.
I see. Okay. So but where's the 50-50? I mean, where's the...
Well, because if you were both of normal retirement age and both started, if you had both started at normal retirement age and you took your benefit and she applied for hers, it would have been 50% of yours.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
And so in other words, for example, let's say yours is 1800. Had you taken it at age 65, which was your normal retirement age back then, it probably would have been something like, let's say it's 1500. And had your wife waited until her full retirement age at 65 rather than 600, it probably would have been something like 750.
I see.
Got it?
Okay.
And Bob, you retired, you were self-employed?
Yes.
How old were you when you retired?
70 and a half.
Oh, and that's when you quit working?
Well, I'm still... Yes, I'm.
You still work, don't you, Bob?
Yeah. Well, I still, but I'm not taking a salary.
All right. And what did you do, just out of curiosity?
Well, I was actually very involved in the music business as a record producer and a retail wholesaler.
Oh, good for you.
And I got into other investments. I that's kind of what I get to do. I do some investments, and I. I've had a small vineyard. I grow grapes and little odds and ends like that.
Do you bottle your own wine?
No.
Oh, you don't.
Didn't want to get involved with that.
Oh, good for you.
Appreciate the call, Bob.
Huh?
Yeah, appreciate the call. Bob. Wish you well. You know, it's interesting. So, Pop's 89. Sounds in good health. You, you wonder how much correlation is between that kind of continued work and life expectancy, considering the average American male born today lives to 76 or something. Whatever the
life expectancy. Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk to Philip. Philip, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Philip.
Hi. I have a my wife, about a couple weeks ago, got a call, and her father passed away about a year ago, and we got a call that from, I guess, his pension plan, and said that we were going to be receiving split between two ways from my sister-in-law and my wife. So about 30 grand split both ways, so about $15,000.
Okay.
Is that something that comes in a lump sum? Is it paid out? We're just sort of, we're kind of playing a little static with the lady.
So, Philip, where did your father-in-law work?
He was an electrician, so it was like a union, electrician union.
So yeah. What he probably had there was actually a life insurance policy.
Oh, I don't know. It could have been a savings plan. That
it could have been a 401k.
Yes, yeah. It could have been a union 401k plan.
Yeah, he wasn't the best with his money, so I would probably say that it probably wasn't one of a 401k. But I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, but on some prevailing wage jobs for unions, they're required to fund a pension plan for them. So okay. the answer to your question is
it depends.
It depends. but you could take it as a lump sum, or it might be eligible to be rolled over into a beneficiary IRA.
Who's taking charge of the paperwork and making sure things are getting split properly?
Well, unfortunately, it's my sister-in-law. So basically, all we have to do is send in a death certificate, and apparently, that's all they're waiting for to cut us.
So here's the thing. If it's a life insurance, which it could be, life insurance proceeds are tax-free the vast majority of time. And in this case, it'd be tax-free. So the money would be tax-free, and you could do whatever you wanted with it. If, on the other hand, the money is, because you said some of the retirement part, if the money was from sort of a retirement savings account, some sort of a pension cash balance account, then the money, you've got a couple different options. If you receive it all, it will be taxable to you in the year in which it's received.
So it would be 15, you said it's 30,000 split between the two?
Yes.
Yeah. But a way to avoid that is your wife can set up what's called a beneficiary IRA and have the money transferred to a beneficiary IRA and avoid current income taxes. Now, she would be required to take a minimum distribution each year based on her life expectancy, but it is a way to defer the taxable income from it.
Yeah.
What we were told was that they're going to tax it like 22% right off the bat.
Okay.
And then we'll get
you answered part of your question.
It is a pension. Then.
And it can be rolled over.
And if you don't and they won't tax it, what will happen is they will withhold 20% for federal income tax and will withhold nothing for the state unless you tell them to.
Okay.
And that's a withholding that doesn't have anything to do with your tax liability. The tax liability is determined at the end of the year when this $15,000 will be added on to your ordinary income for the family.
What's your income like and the rest of your financial situation like?
Total, we're about 70,000, 80,000 a year.
And what would you do? What does your wife want to do with these dollars?
Well, now that it came as a big surprise, so now we're going to hopefully in about a year that we use it towards a down payment for a house. That's what we want to do with it.
All right,
great,
good. Yep, I'd just pay the taxes on it.
I'd take it and receive it.
Yeah, I would just pay the taxes on it.
You could technically you could put it into an IRA today. Take it out next year. If it's used up, you can only take up to $10,000. Use for the first-time house. It's not going to be a penalty, but you're just going to be pushing the taxes from one year to the next. Sounds like you're in a 15% federal tax bracket. Do you have kids?
No kids.
But still, even still with your itemized deduction, your two personal exemptions, you'd still be in a 15% federal income tax bracket.
Just take it.
You might want to have them withhold some California tax, though.
And that'll be a one-time withholding. You won't get withheld any longer.
Correct. I have just for that transaction.
I'd have probably
just four. Put that into a savings account?
Yes. Do not put it in a mutual fund.
Yeah. When you go to the bank and they tell you to go visit their financial advisor sitting in the corner, just say no, thank you, and just put it in an account and say, and then complain about how low the yield is.
Yeah.
But just
and
leave it there.
And how bad the service is at the bank.
But just leave it there.
And how rude the people are, too. You can have a whole evening of how bad everything in life is.
All right.
Another reason to have a beer. I appreciate it, guys.
Hey, Philip, remember, technically, this is separate property for your wife, which means she inherited it.
This big inheritance, you never know. If she doesn't show up tomorrow, you know, you'll know why.
So
it's 15 grand. That's what she's been waiting for.
She's like, oh, I'm finally done with this ball and chain. That Philip guy, what was I thinking?
I got all of this money now.
Thanks for the appreciation. Help me out here. I appreciate it.
All right, appreciate the call.
Good luck.
So technically, it's separate property, and if she commingles it with him, and let's just say something would happen and they got a divorce, he would get half of that $15,000 after taxes. Right around $5,000, maybe $6,000.
I mean, it's not it's enough for them to help them get into a house.
But
which
the reason
awesome.
I wanted to point out that it's separate property, if they had called and said it was $150,000, we would have spent a lot of time talking about the fact that it was her money, not his. And just because he was a gold digger and tried to marry into all that wealth.
Well, this is a serious issue because we spend time sometimes, you'll see, and I know we're kind of joking about his wife leaving him and obviously, nobody likes divorce, that sort of thing. But the reality is,
the people getting divorced probably like it. Some of them do.
Nobody likes divorce. I mean, they see that as a better option than their current environment.
No one says, "Oh, I'm going to get married so I get a divorce." But when they get a divorce, some people
sometimes. We understand. Our point is, when somebody is inheriting dollars. That is, even though it's California's community property state, that is not community property. It is separate property. Once it's commingled with other assets, it becomes community property. And we've had times, Pat, you have, I know you have, because I've had enough, where somebody inherits some assets, husband and wife both sitting there. The one who doesn't, the spouse, was office, I've had it happen. Oh, no, let's just put it all into this existing joint account or existing trust that we've got set up here. The one who inherited the money is like, no, I think we should keep it separate. And I mean, as advisors, we need to counsel on here's how the rules work behind it. You know, we're not there to dictate.
And
how
I saw both.
Things,
I've seen people that have commingled it and got a divorce, and then fought in court how to uncommingle it. And I've seen people that didn't commingle it and kept it separate and got a divorce. And
usually we see people inherit it. And don't get divorced.
Well, that's just because you become a client of our firm doesn't mean you're going to get a divorce.
Or just because you inherit money.
Yes, correct.
Doesn't mean you're going to leave your spouse.
Yeah, lots of people inherit money.
Leaving their spouse.
Yeah.
Anyway, unfortunately, we are running out of time here. And because it's fun being here. I enjoy being here. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11. We rebroadcast Sundays from 2 to 3. But you can get a podcast of this program. Listen to it anytime. Like today's show, you think, that was so good. I'd like to hear that again. You can download the podcast. Just go to our website, HansonMcLean.com. At HansonMcLean.com, click around. You'll see where to get the podcast. But on our website, we've got some great material. One of the things you might want to take a look at, if you're nearing retirement, we have the 7 Personal Decision Point free ebook that helps people with retirement transition to think through those things. Again, it's the 7 Personal Decision Points ebook. Encourage you to download that. We've got some other great material there. This music means we got to shut up, unfortunately. We look forward to being with you next weekend. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and your week. This has been Hanson McLean.